Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, bringing you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, and I'm proud and honored to introduce to you our guest today. He is Congressman Jerry Nadler, Democrat of New York City, and the second-ranking Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee. You will not find a more passionate defender of American civil rights and civil liberties than Congressman Jerry Nadler. I happen to know this personally. While I never worked for Jerry Nadler, I had the privilege of sitting behind him at House Judiciary Committee hearings and votes. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, he had the good seats with all the members of Congress. Of course, they have the plush seats. You may have seen us on C-SPAN. I was one of the staffers sitting on the back benches, which are pretty uncomfortable. But I don't mean to complain. I was actually very impressed by listening to Congressman Nadler, listening to his wit and his eloquence and his passionate defense of American civil rights and civil liberties. You may know that Congressman Nadler represents not just New York City, but lower Manhattan. He represents that patch of earth where the World Trade Center once stood. And so I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that it's probable that Congressman Nadler lost more constituents murdered on September 11, 2001, than any other member of Congress. So Congressman Nadler understands firsthand the danger and the horror of terrorism. And, of course, he voted to authorize the war in Afghanistan along with every member of Congress save one. So he understands the importance of American military might. But Congressman Nadler understands more than that. He understands that American might and American military might, economic might, neither of them are as important or as valuable as American values, as the freedoms we have in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And as important as it is to fight terrorism, to stop the murder of American citizens on American soil, it is also important that America not give up that which makes us great, our American freedoms and values. And I think that never was this more in evidence than in the debate over the Patriot Act, a large part of what we're going to discuss this hour. This act, which was to fight terrorism, it was also understood by Jerry Nadler and many Democrats also had to protect American civil liberties. If you want to call in and talk with this leading light of the Democratic Party, Congressman Jerry Nadler, here is your chance. The numbers are 877-57-SCOOP. That's toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP. Or I know many of you like to send an email. Feel free to do so. You can send the email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. If you want to comment on the blog, and many of you do that, all you have to do is go to www.radioinsidescoop.com and comment on the blog. I want to say one last thing about Jerry Nadler before I bring him on the air. And that is that as terrific a congressman as he is, and I have heard really some fascinating, wonderful speeches by Jerry Nadler defending us against the Republican onslaught into our civil liberties, I can tell you from personal experience, he's also a really nice guy. In the breaks that we had in between the Republican onslaughts, Jerry Nadler would often turn around and tell me and tell other staffers some really cool jokes, actually. He's funny, he's a nice guy, and I'm very proud and honored to have the privilege of having him here on the Inside Scoop. Congressman Jerry Nadler, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Well, thank you very much.
Let me tell you, just because I gave you that flowery introduction doesn't mean I'm not going to ask you some tough questions.
That's okay.
I think you can handle it. Let me start with the Patriot Act, and I want to start with what happened.
You've got a tremendous feedback right now. It's hard to
understand
you.
I apologize. Does that make it any better?
A bit, yeah.
All right. I apologize for that. Let me ask you this. In terms of what happened last Thursday, the Democrats were trying to pass a bill to weaken some of the harsher provisions of the Patriot Act, and in fact ended up standing on their feet and shouting, shame, shame, shame. What was going on last Thursday?
Well, we were trying to pass an amendment to the Commerce Justice State Annual Appropriations Bill to say that none of the funds appropriated in this bill for the next year can be used to enforce Section 215 of the Patriot Act, just one of the sections, one of the really bad sections of the Patriot Act. There's some okay sections, but this is one of the really bad ones. And that this section says that the FBI can seize anything, including the records of what books you're taking out of the library, what you're reading, your internet records, anything, without a warrant or probable cause to believe you're committing a crime or may commit a crime. All they have to do is go to a secret court called the FISA court, and based on an affidavit that says that their search is relevant to an authorized investigation of international intelligence activities, not that you'd have anything to do with it, but just that this investigation is warrant that they're asking for is relevant to an investigation, the judge must grant it, and the library must tell them whatever they want to know, what books you're reading, what you're doing on the internet, etc.
Just to be clear to our listeners, the Patriot Act gives no authority to a judge to turn down this warrant?
No. All the judge has the authority to do, actually, is to examine whether the FBI is saying what they're supposed to say, namely that it's relevant to a proper investigation. The judge can't investigate into whether it really is relevant. They just have to say so.
And they don't have to tell the target, certainly.
No, they don't have to tell the target. They just have to say that the information they're requesting is relevant to an authorized investigation to protect against international terrorism or clandestine intelligence activity. So long as they state that, the statute says the judge has to grant the order.
Okay, so tell me what happened last Thursday.
It also says that nobody can tell you or anybody else that such an order has been requested or granted. You can't fight the order. You don't even have to know that you're being spied upon or that you were spied upon. Nobody can tell anybody. You can't even go to court to try to stop it because you're not allowed to know it.
Okay.
So we had this amendment, which was offered by Bernie Sanders and Butch Otter, who's a Republican. Bernie's an independent, of course, who normally votes for the Democrats, and myself and a couple of others, to say you can't enforce this section. And the normal law would apply. You want a warrant, you go to court, and you should say that there's some probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed or is about to be committed, and you need the investigation. But you have to then show some evidence of that probable cause to a judge.
So what happened on the House floor?
Most of the Democrats voted for it, all but four. There were something like 28 Republican votes for it out of 228 members, and it was actually the House normally, the rules provide that you have 15 minutes for a vote. At the end of 15 minutes, the vote was 219 in favor, which is an absolute majority of the House. 218 is an absolute majority. 219 in favor, 201 opposed. The Republicans, who of course are in control and have the gavel, the Republican leadership, held the vote open for 38 minutes, which is clearly against the rules, as they went around trying to twist arms of various of the Republicans and managed to twist enough arms to get people to switch votes. So eventually it went down to 210 to 210 and was defeated on a tie vote. Now, we were, of course, shouting shame, shame, and regular order and close the vote because they're not supposed to keep the vote open. It's like, you know, if at the end of nine innings the Yankees are winning, you declare they won. You don't keep it going until the other team gets more runs and then bang the gavel and say the game's over. If you allow this, and this has now happened a number of times. The worst example was in the Medicare vote last November, December, when they kept it open for 3 hours. If you allow the majority to keep the vote open as long as necessary for them to twist the arms, then whoever has the gavel can never lose a vote. You can never win a vote.
Because they can hold it open forever, I guess.
They can hold it open forever. And in the Medicare vote, they made it very clear they'd hold it open for days if they had to. They held it open for 3 hours, 2 hours of which an absolute majority had voted, and in fact, everybody in the House had voted, with one exception.
Now, how do they do this? I mean, how does a Republican just violate the rules like this?
Well, they violate it because you can't enforce the rules. The only way you can enforce the rules is by getting a majority vote.
And of course, they have
on the procedural votes, as opposed to on a procedural vote, they really crack the whip. And if you're a Republican, you vote against the party leadership on a procedural vote, you're subject to all sorts of sanctions.
Let me ask you this about the Patriot Act. That's something that I've never understood. The Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution.
Yes.
And let me read this to our listeners. It says, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Why isn't this provision of the Patriot Act against the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution?
I think it is. I think it's unconstitutional, and I suspect that the ACLU is looking for a way to get it into court. Of course, it's very difficult to get it into court because normally the way you get something at the court is if someone issues a warrant and you think it's not valid, you contest it in court. But if you don't know that this has occurred and it's against the law to tell you, which I think is a violation of the First Amendment, by the way,
okay,
how does anyone bring a lawsuit?
Well, let me ask you this. John Ashcroft says that, well, we shouldn't worry about this provision of the Patriot Act because it's never been used. How would you respond to that?
Well, first of all, a survey conducted by the University of Illinois suggested that by December 2001, the FBI had already approached 85 out of 1,500 libraries that they surveyed. But second of all...
Well, so you're saying that Ashcroft is not telling the truth, basically.
Well, according to that University of Illinois survey, he's not telling the truth, which, of course, shocks me no end.
Yeah, well...
But second, let's assume he is telling the truth. I mean, either it's unnecessary or it's terrible. If it's unnecessary, what do you need it for?
Let me also...
He's saying it's never used. But the fact is, it's abusive, and just its existence will have a real chilling effect on free speech, obviously. I mean, you know, if you set the FBI loose on the American public, there's going to have a chilling effect. If people think that their conversations or their emails or their reading habits are being monitored, you're going to inevitably feel less comfortable saying what they think, especially if it's not what the government wants them to think.
Mr. Nadler, I want to read to you some of the emails that I'm already getting in here on my blog and on the Internet. And by the way, if you want to comment, all you have to do is send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com, or you can call in and talk to us personally at 877-57-SCOOP. One of my conservative listeners, and while most of my listeners are progressive, we do have some conservative listeners, Ben says that the only people who need to fear the Patriot Act are criminals. I guess it comes down to what you're willing to do to prevent thousands of lost lives again.
Well, let me answer that. That's a common misconception on all civil liberties. It's not just criminals who have to fear the Patriot Act or anything else. If I am not a criminal, and if I'm, I may not want anybody knowing what I read. I may want privacy, especially if I'm reading about, I'm reading Das Kapital. It doesn't mean I'm a communist. I may not want anybody to know what I read. I may not read Das Kapital.
You can read Mein Kampf.
But I may not read it because I'm worried about who's going to know that I'm reading it.
Yeah, just as an example.
The fact is, there is a chilling impact on free speech. And as we learned, you know, it's very naive to think that as we learned from the FBI's COINTELPRO operations during the against Vietnam War opponents, the FBI spied on perfectly legitimate, peaceful groups that opposed the war and people who opposed the war, which they're entitled to do, spied on them and not just spied on them, but infiltrated these groups and had provocateurs trying to provoke disputes and fights within them and even violence. So you have to be careful. Not everyone who works for government is a saint. Not everyone behaves properly all the time. And the reason we have the Bill of Rights, the reason we have these protections, is to protect not criminals, but to protect honest, good people against overbearing government.
And just to note, J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI used to spy on Martin Luther King, trying to prove he was a communist. He couldn't prove that. He did find that he was having an extramarital affair.
And used that to try to break up his marriage and to try to get him to commit suicide. The fact is, again, J. Edgar Hoover is a perfect illustration. You cannot assume everyone who works for government is a saint, and you cannot give government or anyone else too much power. Now, yes, we have to have, obviously we have to have security. Yes, we have to, obviously we have to have security. Yes, we have to have strong investigatory powers. But the key to why some of the provisions of the Patriot Act are bad is that, you know, I don't hesitate in allowing the government to investigate people they think are committing crimes or maybe plotting terrorism, whatever. But you should have to show the evidence why you think this may be the case, why you should wiretap this person, why you should look at this guy's emails or whatever, to a neutral judge and have him agree or her agree that there is probable cause to think that there's something going on dangerous here, some crime that has been committed or is about to be committed. That's the point of the Fourth Amendment.
Now,
that's the point of our liberties. Otherwise, you have no check on government power. And frankly, I'm surprised that, I mean, maybe your listener is not real conservative, but a conservative is someone who should be very concerned on liberties. And in fact, of course, the foundation of our country. The whole point of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution is to limit government power to restrict liberty. That's why we rebelled against George III, King George III, after all.
Let me go to the phones. If you want to call in and talk to Mr. Nadler, you can at 877-57-SCOOP or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Congressman Jerry Nadler. What's your first name? Where are you from?
It's Rod from New York City.
Hey, Rod from New York City. Is Mr. Nadler your congressman?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. You read my blog entry, and I'm just thrilled to have both of you in this. I love the show, and I'm a constituent of Congressman Nadler. Thank you for all your great work, Congressman.
Well, thank you.
What's your question, Ron, or comment?
How far are we getting? I guess this is a question to the congressman. How far are we getting as to the black box voting?
How far are we getting as to what?
Verifiable voting.
You mean the paper record on voting? Is that what you're asking about?
I couldn't hear him. How far are we getting to
About paper records on voting to verify electronic voting.
Fortunately, there are going to be quite a few people, I think something like 30 million people, who are going to be voting in this year's election on electronic voting machines without paper verification, which I think is very bad, but I don't think there's much we can do about it for this year's election as a practical matter. We should prohibit that. It's very dangerous. Because the thing about electronic voting, the virtue of it, is that you can push a button at 9 o'clock and get all the results. The danger of it, and it's easy to use, it's like an ATM machine, but the danger is that, like any other computer, any good hacker or dishonest employee of the vendor or of the Board of Elections could put in a computer code that says disregard every third Democratic vote or switch every fifth Republican vote or whatever. You might not even know an election was stolen. You may have no suspicion afterwards at all. So you need a verifiable paper, and there's no way of conducting a recount. All you know is that the machine says 238 to 122 at the end of the night.
Now, Mr. Nadler, I've never understood how it is that Republicans can even argue against a paper verified record. What are they saying? We don't want a fair count? How do they argue?
No, they don't say we don't want a fair count. They say it's costly and it's unnecessary because the security guarantees for these machines are airtight and are very firm. And the reason they're wrong is that if a hacker can hack into the Pentagon computer, which I assume is a lot more secure than these machines are, then someone can hack into them. I mean, you never know. There's always a race between defense and offense, and the fact is you have to have more certitude.
Rod, anything else?
Yeah. Actually, I think the danger of a rapid counting, you know, is not at all a good thing, because that just, I mean, if it's erroneous by whatever, they can keep on pointing to it.
It isn't how rapid it is, it's whether it's accurate or not that matters, obviously. And my point is that the electronic voting is very rapid for the count, which is nice, but if it's not accurate, it can be very accurate. But the fact is you don't know. Because there might be a mistake in the programming, there might be deliberate tampering with the programming, you just don't know, and that is terrible.
Rod, thanks very much for your call. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Okay, thanks.
I do want to ask you, and we're about to go to commercial break. I want to ask you, Mr. Nadler, this week it looks like the Republicans in the Senate are going to bring up a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage.
Yep.
I think there's something similar, but not exactly the same, as going on in the House. I want to know from you, when we come back from break, what exactly is going on with this? What do you think are their motivations behind it? And how the House resolution differs from the constitutional amendment? I like to give some of the background facts on this. So when we come back, we're going to talk more about that. And if you want to ask Mr. Nadler anything about what's going on in Congress, here's your chance to call in and discuss the issues with one of the leading lights of the Democratic Party. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. 877-57-SCOOP, or you can email me to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be right back.
Thank you. The Timken Company, based in Canton, Ohio, makes steel and other industrial products, and last year it was the proud recipient of a visit by His Eminence, George W. Bush. The Prez had traveled to Ohio, a state that's up for grabs in this fall's election, to hype the value of all the tax giveaways he's passed for the rich. He went to Canton to claim that those giveaways would trickle down from the rich to create jobs for middle-class America, and he needed a good visual for his televised speech. Timken's factory was the perfect made-for-TV backdrop. A crowd of Timken's hard-hatted blue-collar workers was dutifully assembled for Bush. The boss man, Tim Timken himself, was on stage beaming with pride and nodding in approval at George's every sentence. Why wouldn't he? Tim has long been a major financial backer of both books. Fast forward to May of this year. Just months after George's highly publicized rooster strut in Canton, Tim announced that he was closing three of his U.S. factories, eliminating 1,300 jobs, and moving production to low-wage centers elsewhere, including overseas. Curiously, there was no national media coverage of this development, which made a mockery of Bush's earlier political posturing. What's to happen to the workers who were made to serve as props for George's pitch about the power of trickle-down economics? I have no idea what I'm going to do, says Scott Anderson, 41 years old and a 23-year loyal worker at Timken. There are just no good job opportunities left in this community. Scott added that he now couldn't pay for the college education of his kids. I want a better America, as my parents did for me, he says. Ironically, a Timken spokesman coldly replied, it's a business issue, not a political issue. This is Jim Hightower saying he's dead wrong about that. By stiffing America's middle class, Bush and Tim Timken are playing with political dynamite.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill six eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop on Washington. I'm your host, Mark Levine. My guest is Congressman Jerry Nadler of New York City. We're talking about what's going on in Congress, both what happened last week, where the Republicans used some rules violations to prevent the Democrats from weakening some of the harsh aspects of the Patriot Act, to what's going on this week when, in the Senate at least, they're going to be, it looks like they're going to have a constitutional amendment on whether to ban marriages between gay people. And something similar is coming up in the House. Congressman Nadler, what's going on in Congress, and what's your position on this?
Well, I'm very much opposed to any constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage or same-sex marriage. Now, apparently they're going to have a vote on this. You need a two-thirds vote in both houses to submit a constitutional amendment to the states. The president is pushing this, and the Republican Senate leadership is pushing it, I think only, really, for two reasons. Number one, to give a sop, to throw a bone to the right-wing religious conservatives in the Republican Party. And number two, to create a wedge issue, to make Democratic senators, many of them at least, vote against it, to have an issue in the fall election. They know there's no possibility of getting anywhere near enough votes. I'm not even sure they'll have a majority, let alone two-thirds. Now, in the House, we've been having, I'm the number four, not the number two ranking Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, and I'm the ranking Democrat on the Constitution Subcommittee. The Constitution Subcommittee is holding five hearings. We've held three of them already on the, every few weeks on the different aspects of the constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. It's clear there aren't the votes in the House to pass this amendment either, at least this year, but they are going to bring up either the constitutional amendment for the same reasons as in the Senate, or they may do something almost as pernicious, maybe even more pernicious, which is to bring up a so-called court stripping bill, which might actually pass. Now, a court stripping bill would simply strip the courts of jurisdiction to consider certain cases, so that a challenge to the constitutionality of a ban on gay marriage, for example, this would say that the court lacks jurisdiction to hear the arguments. In other words, if someone wants to say that this violates equal protection in some state, it might simply say the court shall not have the jurisdiction to hear the arguments. Now,
has this ever worked in the past? Have there been court stripping bills that have passed in the past?
I think there have been some. I'm not sure. Narrowly. Now, they're very, at some point in our history. But the idea, the idea of a court stripping bill, which is to take away the ability of someone to vindicate a constitutional right or to argue that something violates a constitutional right and to say that there's no remedy, that a court can't even listen to the argument and make a decision, is terrible. I mean, it's a tyrannical power. What protects our liberties is the ability of the courts to say when the government is violating your rights. And if you say that the government may violate your rights or some law may violate your rights and may violate the Constitution, but you cannot go to court to argue that, you're saying that the constitutional provision and the civil liberties have no effect.
Sounds to me like it's a backhanded way to repeal the Constitution.
Well,
at least
it
that
is.
Provision.
In fact, there's some question as to the constitutionality of that as applied to constitutional liberties for that reason. But we will probably vote on one or both of these this year. It's unclear at this point whether the constitutional amendment would be the same as that in the Senate. It might have a slightly different wording, but it would be equally bad. Now, during the hearings, I must say that some of the very conservative witnesses that the Republicans called, and even someone like Robert Barr, who's a former Republican, very conservative Republican congressman from Georgia, who is the author of the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, which passed in 1996, a lot of the conservatives argued, and Bob Barr argued, that a constitutional amendment to bar gay marriage is not necessary to defend, only Massachusetts at this point recognizes gay marriage. The argument for a constitutional amendment is that you have to prevent other states from being forced to recognize gay marriage, even if they don't want to, because of the constitutional provision that says each state must give full faith and credit to the public acts of every other state. DOMA says you don't have to do that. That is for this purpose, for gay marriage. Bob Barr and others argue that a constitutional amendment is unnecessary and a violation of states' rights, that it's unnecessary because DOMA serves that purpose, and the constitutional amendment will go farther in saying no state may recognize gay marriage if the state, through referendum or through action of the legislature or through local court order, decides to, and they're opposed to it because it violates states' rights in that way. I just want to add one other thing. I can think of no instance in American history where you passed a constitutional amendment in anticipation that a court might declare a law unconstitutional. We have passed constitutional amendments sometimes, and certainly there have been many have been proposed, because someone didn't like a court decision that something was unconstitutional, and we say we've got to overturn that with a constitutional amendment. Here they're saying, what if the courts declare DOMA unconstitutional? We'd better pass a constitutional amendment in advance just in case. I don't think we've ever done that in our history.
I would also note that the original Constitution, of course, only counted white men with property, the right to vote. And since that time, we've had amendment after amendment expanding civil rights for blacks, for women.
Well, the history of this country can be read largely as a history of expanding the understanding of the sentence in the Declaration of Independence that says that all men are created equal. In 1776, men certainly meant just that, men, not women. It meant white men, not red men, American Indians, Native Americans. It didn't mean black men. So we have, at least in theory, it didn't even mean non-property people because they couldn't vote.
Right.
It now means, certainly we gradually, first we extended it to mean non-property men. Then we said, at least in theory, it meant black men, too. That was the 14th Amendment. We're still working on that one, but at least in theory, we say that now. Then we said women too, the women's rights, well, the women's voting amendment, and many of our different laws, and many of our court decisions. The only people who, at least in theory today, are not granted equal rights, a lot of people aren't granted it in reality, but we're working on it. But the only ones who in theory are still not granted equal rights are gay and lesbian and transgender and bisexual people.
If you want to call in and discuss these matters with Representative Nadler, I encourage you to do so. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or as many of you have already done, you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. And I want to read to you an email that I got, Mr. Nadler, about what happened last Thursday. This is from Gordon in Michigan. He writes, pardon my cynicism, but the Republicans broke the rules and got away with it and get away with it time and again while the Democrats cry shame, shame, shame. What's wrong with this picture? The yin is allowing the yang to run roughshod while claiming, oh, we can't do anything because we're outnumbered. Why can't the Democrats hold a filibuster?
Because
I know
the
answer.
House, you can't filibuster. In the Senate, you can.
Right.
It's very simple. In the House, there are a lot of differences between the House and the Senate and between the rules. Under the House, the Rules Committee sets the rule, which says how long the debate can go on, and that's it. We vote against the rule. The rule is adopted by party vote, which they mostly are, and we have no ability. I mean, it's very frustrating to be a House minority member if the majority is running roughshod because there is no ability, as there is in the Senate. In the Senate, you can filibuster. Individuals have a lot of rights to for instance, in the Senate, any member can get up and offer an amendment on any bill. It doesn't even have to be germane. In the House, you can only offer an amendment on the floor if the Rules Committee gave you permission to do that by name.
Now, aren't there some procedural things that Democrats can do to stall, to show their disagreement?
Very little. I mean, yes, we can admit a delay while they count the votes to adjourn. There's some dilatory things you can do, but not really.
Okay.
Not beyond that.
Gordon goes on to say, well, I hope that answered your question, Gordon, but Gordon goes on to say that the Constitution was violated in the last election, and the, as he calls it, the cratic side of the Republicratic Party, he's arguing that the two parties are the same, that the Democratic Party acquiesced without even a recount. Why are the Democrats, in other words, Gordon's asking, why the Democrats fight harder?
Well, I think that there is considerable criticism that can be made of the Democrats in the 2000 election and the aftermath with some justification. I don't think you can really fault the House Democrats right now, certainly not in the last 2 years. I think we have fought I mean, maybe someone can figure out some way we could have fought that we haven't. I don't know of any. There was an article in the New Republic a while ago about the frustrated House Democrats. I mean, when we scream and yell and do whatever we can, the press usually doesn't report it. And the Republicans wield the power of the gavel and the power of the majority and the rules to shut us down, to stop us from legally offering amendments. And there's very little we can do about it. We just don't have the power.
Congressman Nadler, I want to ask you a question and then hold off on your answer until after we come back from break. But it's from Fred in Manhattan. Doesn't say whether he's in your district or not. But he very much wants to ask you about the plan or the possibility that the executive branch might suspend or postpone our elections. Fred writes, that's our last grasp on democracy. You've got to talk about this. I want you to hold on to your answer till after the break. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Back with more from Congressman Nadler right after this.
The Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
It's day 12 of an indefinite hunger strike by Gary Nilsson, the president of the Communication Workers of America, Local 1365 in Andover, Massachusetts. Nilsson's union has shrunk from 3,000 to 300 members in 3 years. Nilsson is fasting to get a better financial package for 34 maintenance workers due to be laid off from Lucent Technologies this Friday. The North Shore Labor Council is asking area union workers to show their support by fasting for 24 hours. Nilsson vowed to continue drinking only fruit juice and water until he gets his members the severance package he feels they deserve.
A plan by an iron ore supplier to hire temporary workers during a labor dispute has steelworkers fired up. Cleveland Cliffs Incorporated has announced in a letter that if the labor dispute is not resolved by July 31st and a strike does occur, non-regional workers will be used to keep its four Minnesota and Michigan mines running. Temporary workers haven't been used during labor disputes in the Iron Range mining industry for more than 30 years. The company says that the demand for taconite pellets is at an all-time high, but inventories are low, and if there is a disruption, it could cause vendors to look elsewhere. The union says the company is just trying to threaten the employees by using a classic union-busting technique.
Lights on Broadway could go dark as early as this week. Contract talks broke down between the Broadway Actors Union, Equity, and theater producers on Saturday. No further talks are scheduled with the producers' trade group, so now Equity is approaching individual producers and on Sunday reached a labor agreement with the producer of The Boy from Oz. This prevents any work stoppage for that musical, though a strike authorization for all other Broadway shows could come as early as this week.
Under a new program, postal workers who are determined to be permanently ill or injured could lose all of the benefits of their union contract. The program, called the Outplacement Initiative, would use government funding to send employees to work for private companies. When placed, the worker will lose union representation, have health benefits switched to the new employers, and their federal pension will be frozen without future earning potential. Currently being tested in Flushing, New York, the Postal Service expects to expand the program throughout the country if successful.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America is a land of equal opportunity, right? Well, if someone's lacking health insurance at retirement age, they're 43% more likely to die prematurely than their peers, according to a new study by Health Affairs. The report translates into more than 100,000 preventable deaths for people between the ages of 55 to 64, placing uninsurance as the third most common cause of death for this age group. You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington. We're talking here with one of the leading lights of the Democratic Party, Congressman Jerry Nadler, who sits on the House Judiciary Committee and has been in the forefront of defending American civil liberties. We're talking about really whatever you want to talk about with him regarding American civil liberties, a Judiciary Committee. He represents New York City. We've gotten a number of comments from New York City, but you don't have to be from New York to call in. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. Before we went on break, I read an email from Fred in Manhattan, who is concerned that the executive branch might suspend or postpone elections. He says that's our last grasp on democracy. Mr. Nadler, could they do that?
I don't think so. The laws about elections are, first of all, are within guidelines established by Congress. It's a state function. You know, until 19-something or other in the 30s and 40s, Maine held elections, their elections in September. Louisiana holds elections starting in November and finish. They hold runoff elections in December. So you can, I mean, those are state matters. Now, Congress could change the law in advance and might provide for an alternate election day in a local area in case of a disaster, I suppose, but I don't think the executive branch could do that. Now, there is precedent, if there's a tornado or a hurricane or whatever, there's precedent or a breakdown in voting machines, there's precedent for going into a local federal court and getting a court order to keep the polls open a few extra hours. I suppose a court could order in case of a disaster, God forbid, in some local area that the polls stay open an extra day, you know, an extra day or something there. Congress could probably and maybe should provide that in case of a disaster that stops the holding of an orderly election in a given area, that could be done a day or two or a week later, I suppose. But I don't think the executive could. And I think you'd have to provide for that by law in advance. I don't think the executive could do that.
Well, I know that, for example,
and that would have to be limited locally. I certainly wouldn't want anybody to have the power to postpone a whole election, because then you might have the question of maybe political motivation.
Sure. I do know that on September 11, 2001, there was a primary election in New York City.
Yes.
That was postponed.
But that was postponed by executive action of the State Board of Elections under state law.
Okay.
We're talking about national elections, most of which are governed by state law.
Now, I do know also, and this may be what Fred is concerned about, there have been a lot of reports in the newspapers that they are considering this, or at least their executive committees are examining
suggested it. I saw a report in the newspaper that someone suggested it. I don't know of anybody actively considering it, though. Who knows? But I don't see how the executive could do it. I mean, maybe they should ask Congress to set up some orderly thing in case of a disaster. And frankly, in case of a disaster, if God forbid there were, I mean, some major catastrophe, so in East Oshkosh, if you couldn't vote in East Oshkosh on election day, maybe they should be able to vote a day or two or a week later. But that should be, limited to a local area. Certainly, for instance, we had a 9/11. Let's assume that were a national election day. That wouldn't have been a valid excuse to postpone the election in the whole country. Maybe in New York City, maybe in wherever the Pentagon is, in Alexandria.
I should say, Fred, I've argued that because...
What?
This is my response, I guess, to Fred of Manhattan. I would say that what happened in Florida, in West Palm Beach, where they had an illegal ballot, that the butterfly ballot, that so confused people, that might be an example of where in a local issue you might want to redo it if that is an area is wrong.
I'd be very leery of doing that, too, because then you have a lot of litigation as to the ballot and what's real, what's not. A disaster that clearly... prevented people from voting. You couldn't get to the voting booths because of the disaster in a local area. That might justify letting them vote it a couple of days later or something.
I have another question here, another email question from Kathy in Arlington. Wants to know, Mr. Nadler, how did you vote on the Patriot Act? And
I voted against it, and I spoke very vehemently against it.
I would say that I remember, in fact, you had a motion to recommit, which is a procedural motion, to limit it to terrorist attacks only. Why don't you tell our listeners about that?
Well, I frankly don't remember that. I probably did.
Okay.
I was opposed to the Patriot Act because there were a lot of provisions in it that were obviously not right. There's a provision in it that permitted for practical purposes indefinite detention without going before proper judicial review, and that was the one that got me more. I didn't even know about Section 215 at the time, but the other reason I was opposed to it was that, and I said it on the floor, I said, this is a kind of bill where you have to carefully balance legitimate national security and safety concerns with civil liberties. And these are complicated issues, and no one had a chance to read this 272-page bill that had just been in print that morning, and we were voting right away, and I said on the floor, this is the kind of bill that you should have in print, send out to the law school, send out to the Civil Liberties Union, send out to the bar associations, get comments, consider it, vet it, rewrite it, and then vote on it, not practically sight unseen that day, because you're going to find out a lot of things you didn't even know were in the bill and didn't understand the implications of.
I should note that I remember that the House Judiciary Committee did take the time to vote and consider and carefully balance civil liberties and attacks on terrorism and came to an extraordinary conclusion where every member of the House Judiciary Committee voted for an early draft of the Patriot Act, everyone from Bob Barr on the right to Maxine Waters on the left, but that draft they threw away the morning of the vote.
Well, it wasn't the morning of the vote. What happened was we marked up a bill from Monday through Thursday. Marked up meaning we had 4 days in which people were offering amendments, debating the amendments, voting on them, and eventually voted on the bill. And I, to my surprise, found that the bill, after the markup, was acceptable. I had 12 objections, and one by one they'd been eliminated as we adopted amendments, and I voted for it. It was unanimously voted for on Thursday night. Over the weekend, they took the bill that had been reported out of the Judiciary Committee, carefully considered, threw it in the garbage can, and Ashcroft's staff and the staff of the House leadership, that is the Speaker's staff, I'm not even sure if the chairman of the committee staff was involved, secretly wrote a bill over the weekend, a huge bill over the weekend, from scratch, had no relationship to the bill that had been considered in committee. The bill that they secretly wrote and honed over the next 2 days was put on the floor Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock. There were two copies available, one to the touch from the printer, one for the Democrats, one for the Republicans, available at 10 a.m., and we started debate at 11 and voted at 1. No one had a chance to read those bills. We were voting on the basis of staff summaries prepared by staff members who'd read them overnight. And that was no way to do business, especially in a sensitive matter.
Now, has this happened before on other issues in addition to the Patriot Act?
Yes, it's happened repeatedly, unfortunately. The rules of the House specify that you can't vote on a bill unless it's been sitting in print for at least 24 hours. But the Republican leadership, the Rules Committee, simply waives the rule and says that no points of order will stand. And once you adopt the rule, which is done in a party-line vote, in effect, the rule doesn't apply.
Now, what would you say to those that would argue, well, the Democrats did the same thing when they were in the majority?
Well, the Democrats, I gather, I was only here for 2 years when the Democrats were the majority, just learning my way around. I gathered that the Democrats did some things that weren't so nice, but I don't think we were nearly as abusive of the rules. Certainly, I'm told we once kept the vote open for 8 or 9 minutes, and Newt Gingrich, beyond the 15, and Newt Gingrich said it was thug tactics. He called the speaker a thug and the worst thing he ever saw. They routinely do it. 38 minutes, 3 hours, number one. Number two, they don't allow Democratic amendments on the floor for all practical purposes. We did. I mean, they used to complain that we didn't allow enough Republican amendments, but I remember the 2 years that I was there, we had meeting after meeting on how to handle politically embarrassing Republican amendments that were designed to get members from marginal districts to vote in certain ways, and we came up with all sorts of strategies which would not have been necessary to even think about if we simply didn't allow the amendment there.
Well, I want to encourage people to call in. We only got 15 minutes left. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. We appreciate your calls. 877-57-SCOOP. Mr. Nadler, there's been some fights over the budget. I know that 2 years ago, when Senator Tom Daschle was the majority leader of the Senate, the Republicans complained bitterly that he didn't have a budget ready by, I think it was May of that year. Correct me if I'm wrong. But my understanding is Republicans don't have a budget ready even today. Can you tell us what's going on there?
Well, in 1994, the last year there was a Democratic House and Senate at the same time, they failed to adopt a budget resolution, which is supposed to be adopted by, I think, April 15th or March 30th. And the Republicans said that this was the most basic obligation of government to adopt a budget. If you can't even adopt a budget when you have control, you're totally incompetent. Well, they have all three branches now, and they haven't adopted a budget this year, a budget resolution. And the reason they can't adopt a budget resolution is because they've made it impossible. By the tax cuts that they've done, they have so restricted the revenues available to government that the budget committee, which proposes a budget resolution, cuts the discretionary things, housing, education, labor, agriculture, post office, you name it, so far that the Republican members of the Appropriations Committee cannot live with the limits that the budget resolution would place them under. They can't get 218 votes to pass an appropriation bill in any of the various areas we have to pass appropriations bills within the limits the budget committee wants to set. And therefore they can't agree among themselves, so they can't adopt the budget resolution. And that's because the budget resolution that they're putting forward is so unrealistic because of the tax cuts that not only the Democrats, but enough of the Republicans can't live with it.
So they can't repeal the tax cuts because they promised the constituents they won't, and they can't pay for the government.
Administration and the leadership of the House and the Senate has a religious mission to cut taxes above all things. That's what holds the Republican Party together today.
But if they can't pay for government spending on this budget that they want, and they can't repeal the taxes, what's going to happen? I mean, how is this going to be resolved?
What's happening is they'll adopt the appropriations bills without a budget resolution. The whole point of a budget resolution was to basically give some coherence to a budget and to give some discipline to a budget. But we'll do the appropriations, probably in an omnibus bill without amendment and debate and so forth, at the end of the year. We'll do the appropriations without a budget resolution. But what is really happening is because of these tax cuts, we now have a structural deficit. That is a deficit that will be a huge deficit even when the economy is flying, even when we have a huge economic growth rate for as long into the future as we can see. You can't sustain that. It means we're borrowing $450, $500 billion a year, 80% from foreigners abroad. That will not keep going. The interest rates are going to start going up very sharply, and eventually foreigners will stop lending to us unless we reverse course, at which point the economy will go over a cliff and have a 1930s-type depression.
So it's kind of like maxing out on your credit cards. You can live high on the hog for a while, but at some point you got to pay them back, huh?
Well, that's exactly right. That's what's happening.
Okay, we're going to go to one more break. If you want to call in over the break, you can at 877-57-SCOOP. We appreciate your calls, and here's your chance to discuss with one of the leading lights of the Democratic Party, Congressman Jerry Nadler, what's going on in Congress. And when we come back, I want to ask him some election news. I want to ask him about the vice presidential choice of John Edwards and the reports that Republicans are secretly funding Ralph Nader's campaign. Back with more of The Scoop right after this.
time for another Gooberhead Award, issued periodically to people in the news who have their tongues going 100 miles per hour but forgot to put their brains in gear. Today's Goober goes to an organization that marches under the majestic banner of Move America Forward. MAF would have you believe that it's a nonpartisan mass movement of patriots supporting our troops and the commander-in-chief in the war on terrorism. But the majesty of this outfit shrinks to minuscule when you peek behind MAF's red, white, and blue curtain and see that it's nothing but three pathetic right-wingers with a Mr. Microphone. Move America Forward is a front group set up only last month by the Republican PR firm of Russo, Marsh, and Rogers, which pocketed some $2.5 million in payments from Republican politicians in the last election cycle. Far from being patriots, these hired flacks set up MAF to engage in a decidedly unpatriotic act of selectively canceling the First Amendment. What has their knickers in a knot is that Michael Moore's dynamite new movie, Fahrenheit 911, is being shown in theaters all across America. Apparently, Russo, Marsh, and Rogers don't believe in the principles of free speech and open debate, at least not if these principles allow open criticism of their beloved King George W. So these gooberheads launched MAF to trash Moore and try to prevent theaters from presenting his movie. On their website, they publish the addresses of major theater chains, asking rabid Bush supporters to deluge the chains with demands to shut out Moore. Tell the industry executives that we don't want this misleading and grotesque movie being shown in our local cinema, shriek the PR hacks. This is Jim Hightower saying, whether or not you like Moore, no true American can like this goofy, totally un-American stab at censorship. The best way to show up these goobers is to go see the movie and judge it for yourself. That's the American way.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
You know, out here in West Texas, it gets really hot, and it's a tough, dry heat.
Glenn Austell of Lubbock, Texas, talks about Gold Bond medicated powder.
When I'm working outside, my skin gets itchy and irritated. I guess you call it a heat rash or something like that. But Gold Bond relieves the itch and irritation and gives me a cool, refreshing sensation. I'm telling you, once you've tried Gold Bond, you can't live without it.
Gold Bond medicated powder cools and soothes heat rash and irritated skin. Use it directed.
I mean, who wouldn't want to feel cool and refreshed?
Welcome back to the final minutes of Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington. My guest, Congressman Jerry Nadler of New York City, is answering your questions on what's going on in Congress. I'm going to go right to the phones. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Congressman Nadler. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Yes, this is Gordon from Michigan.
Hi, Gordon from Michigan. What's your question for Congressman Nadler?
Well, the congressman has given us a picture of chaos. I wonder if he can give us some optimism for the future and what's going on in Congress these days.
Okay, thanks for your call, Gordon. Congressman?
Well, I like to say in my speeches back in my district that there is nothing fundamentally wrong with the Bush administration and nothing fundamentally wrong with this Congress that one good election wouldn't solve. And optimistic, I'm fairly optimistic about this election. I think if, you know, right now you have a very, very right-wing Republican Party in charge. Thank God for the Democrats in the Senate that have been able to stop some of the excesses. It's very difficult and very frustrating in the House. But, you know, if we get a couple more Senate seats and 11 House seats, which I think is well within the realm of possibility, that we can change House seats, which I think is well within the realm of possibility, that we can change everything around. And then I think that what the Democrats have to do once we're in charge, if the election goes right, number one, in no particular order, we have to do a lot of things, but number one, we have to reverse what the Reagan FCC did when they abolished the Fairness Doctrine and the Equal Time Doctrine, get rid of that so you can have some balance in TV and radio programming again, and so people who are slandered get the right of reply. And number two, we have to have labor law reform so that workers who want to join a union can do so without knowing they're going to get fired and maybe get some money back 10 or 12 years later. Because it's become the common thing to destroy union organizing drives through all sorts of illegal tactics, which basically nothing happens.
Congressman Nadler, does the gerrymandering in Texas...
Congressman Nadler, I really appreciate all the stuff he's doing, and Mark, you've got a great show.
Thank you.
Congressman Nadler mentioned something about the fairness doctrine, and what I'd like to know is what would that do if it's restored to Fox television and radio?
Great question. Thank you for your call.
Certainly mean that... I'm not sure what it would do to Fox, because the fairness doctrine, what it basically says is if you... is that you have to present both sides. They claim to present both sides, and I don't know how much you can really investigate into that. But things like O'Reilly and Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and all the right-wing hate radio and all the right-wing talk radio who make no pretense of being even-handed or who are just, you know, saying we got to elect this one, we got to elect this one, we got to defeat the liberals, you'd have to have equal time for that. You'd have to have a fairness doctrine. That's what effect that would have.
Mr. Nadler, I want to ask you just before we go, first of all, what you thought of the vice presidential choice of John Edwards?
I was delighted with the vice presidential choice of John Edwards for two reasons. Number one, he obviously is very presentable. He's very charismatic, and he's good with audiences. Number one, and number two, his selection will force Kerry, and the fact that he selected him means he knows that and wants to do it, to articulate a more thematic populist economic appeal, as he hasn't been doing too much since the primaries are over. And I think that is necessary both substantively and to give people a reason to vote other than you're not Bush.
Yeah, and John Edwards has done that very well with his entire
John Edwards
Two America
has done that very
speech.
Well. During the primaries, Kerry was doing that to a great extent, but hadn't been too recently, and the fact that he chose John Edwards shows that he's conscious of that and wants to do it. I mean, because obviously Kerry can't, I mean, Edwards can't really force him. But I'm very, it tells me that he wants to do that and that he chose Edwards partially for that reason. And that encourages me to hope that this campaign will have a much more thematic coherence on the more populist economics.
Now, let me ask you about the impact of Ralph Nader, because we have certain people that listen to my program that are actually considering voting for him. And I've been reading and discovering that, in fact, there are Republicans that are supporting his campaign. In fact, his book is being published.
Well, a lot of his money is in an article in the Washington Post or the Times today that a lot of the money and a lot of the people trying to get him on ballots are Republican funders now. Because, obviously, look, maybe, you know, there's an old saying, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. Maybe people could have believed in 2000 there was no difference between the two parties. But obviously, we wouldn't be at war in Iraq today if Al Gore were president. And a lot of other, we wouldn't have the Patriot Act if Al Gore were president. And a lot of other things. There are clearly very severe differences. As many problems as there are with the Democratic Party, there are lots of severe differences. And anybody who's on the left side of the political spectrum, who's any progressive instincts at all, has got to want Kerry and the Democrats elected this year. Then we can fight internally. And Nader is just a saboteur at this point. I mean, I have a great amount of respect, and I, for many decades I liked him and I worked with him and with his organizations, but at this point he's simply a saboteur of any kind of progressive politics in this country, and I don't understand the motive for it.
Are Democrats putting out the word, letting people know of the Republican ties to Nader?
Well, I assume that will happen. First of all, it remains to be seen. You know, the Green Party showed some sense and didn't endorse him, and it remains to be seen how many states he'll be on the ballot in and how much of a problem it is and where that has to be done.
Congressman Nadler, I want to thank you very much for spending the entire hour with us, taking
You're
the time
welcome.
Out of your busy schedule to do that. And thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop. Well, folks, you heard it. That was Congressman Nadler. He is, again, one of the leading lights, I think, of the Democratic Party, someone who really is out there defending American civil liberties, American civil rights in a way that few are. I want you to tune in tomorrow. We're going to have Election Tuesday. Election Tuesday, of course, we go and we debate the Republicans. So you've heard Jerry Nadler. Now you're going to hear the Republicans give their version. I'm going to be debating Tom Robbins, the state chairman of the Utah College Republicans. And here's your chance to argue with them, as I will, about the issues that we face. And then Wednesday, the day after tomorrow, Sybil Edmonds is coming back on the Inside Scoop to discuss her suit against the FBI. She discovered that the FBI had really spies in them, people trying to convert her to terrorist causes, and she tried to tell the FBI and she was fired. You won't want to miss what happened on her case. And then on Thursday, Congressman Barney Frank will be on the Inside Scoop to discuss the really controversial issue of when is it proper to out closeted gay politicians. You won't want to miss the Inside Scoop this week. If you're listening on RadioPower.org, give a donation. They survive entirely on your donations. And please tell people about Inside Scoop and how they can listen in at RadioInsideScoop.com. If you like what we do here, do me a favor. Don't keep it a secret. This is Mark Levine signing off.